Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Radio Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love, sponsored by the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am TJ Jackson, and with me I have both of my brothers, Terrell Jackson.
What's going on?
And Taj Jackson.
What's up?
Yeah.
Taj, I didn't have you.
Yeah, what is that? I was looking at the console. I'm like, is he muting me?
Like, you know, it was like instinctual. I don't know what that means. Yeah. Maybe it was a sign.
It's foreshadowing.
Well, we are live here on the Power of Love show. So if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on in our show, we will be taking some phone calls. We have a really important topic. Domestic violence is going to be the topic today. Mm-hmm. Obviously, last month was Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we're November 1, but all of October. But it's something that we just didn't want to do in November. We want to do close, but we wanted to make sure it's still, I think it's something that needs to go on beyond just October is what
the
point
is. Yeah.
So that's going to be the topic. Obviously, you guys can start tweeting in at DDJ Foundation. Anything you have, any pictures, any statements, any comments,
quotes,
go ahead and start tweeting them in. Here's a disclaimer, because my brothers won't give it. We are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives. We've been impacted by it, and we've learned how to grow from it. And we want you to share our opinions. We want to share our opinions in an attempt to help you navigate whatever you're going through, saying that if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and to find it. Do not just rely on us. As we like to start our shows, I'll start with Terrell. Yeah. I always start with Terrell anyway. Yeah. Terrell, how was your week, man?
Good. A lot of stuff happening.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, we did. And I'll save the DDJF stuff for all of us to talk about. But for me, it was baseball. It was crazy.
The World Series.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think I've seen a better World Series.
It's a good one.
Game two was really good. Game two was really good. The Dodgers lost that one. It was really good, and I thought I wasn't going to see a better game.
But game
and
five.
Then game five came, and that was incredible.
Taj, how many World Series games did you watch?
I'm proud to say I have not watched one.
Terrible.
TJ, he was shocked when I said the Dodgers and the Astros are playing. He was asking me who's playing on the American League.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, what? Astros?
He's from the days of Astros being in the National.
Yeah. Wow.
But they played yesterday.
Yeah.
The Dodgers won. We got game seven tonight. It's great. It's great for baseball. It's a great series. Both teams are playing incredibly well.
Yeah.
So that's great. And Todd, then Halloween was yesterday, last night.
Okay, so Taj, anything else besides non-DDJF Hill LA Halloween event that you want to share with us before?
No.
So you want to go straight into the event on over the weekend?
Why not?
Okay. So Friday we had our second annual Costume for a Cause event. Mm-hmm. And it was awesome.
It was really good.
It was just really cool. A lot of great costumes. It was bigger than last year, more successful than last year. And it was just a really good event, you know. And the whole purpose, one of the main purposes of the event is to bring awareness to DDJF. Mm-hmm. And this year, Hill LA was with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a shout out to TLK Fusion for helping put together the whole thing. Thought you guys did a great job.
Yes.
But it was just a solid event. And before I hand it over to one of my brothers, I just want to thank each and every sponsor. There was a lot of you guys who donated your time, donated your product, donated even some money to help DDJF survive and put off a great event.
Yeah, our sponsors are on our website, so go check them out, everyone. They really helped us out.
Todd, anything else you want to say about the event? Because this is like your favorite thing is this event. This is where Todd comes to live. He's usually sleeping throughout the rest of the year on DDJ.
Yes.
He's committed and really dedicated. So, Todd, go for it.
Well, first of all, Halloween is one of my favorite holidays, you know, besides Christmas and New Year's. But it is, I mean, just seeing the costumes, I love the costume aspect of it, but just raising money and raising awareness for a DJF, it's important, A, and B, I have so much fun doing it because it's fun seeing everyone in their costumes and what are you going to wear and this and that, but besides all that, yeah, what is it?
No, you're good.
Yeah, hook me up, man.
Yeah, he's looking at me like crazy.
We're getting filmed and there's a braid or something sticking up.
Well, that's your
no
fault.
One's helping me out.
Hey,
I'm
going to
see this
in
I'm 2 minutes later.
To Taj.
Thank you, TJ.
He's on the road. He's talking. He's committed to what he's saying. Terrell, you're right next to him. Fix his thing. And he's like, what?
I don't know what your point is.
He's letting me fall. All right, I got it. But anyway, and yes, as you mentioned, TLK Fusion, you know, we couldn't do it without you. And also Hill LA, which, you know, we partnered with for the first time.
Did you guys get the same type of... go ahead, Terrell. Before I ask this question, what about you?
About the party? I think it was great. We thanked them at the event.
Yeah.
But we got to send a special thanks to BG.
Yeah.
It's really his weekend that... because he has this big party and he allowed DDJF and Hill LA...
We hijacked his party, basically.
To piggyback off of his great, brilliant mind. I mean, the mazes that he had in there, the scary mazes, were great. My friends are still talking about it. It's funny, some of them chickened out on some of them. But the decorations, everything was just great on that.
Yeah.
And we have to thank him again. And like you said, all the sponsors, all the volunteers, our board, everybody. Everybody that chipped
shout
in
out
and helped.
To our board
and,
as well.
You know, it was, like you said, it was for fundraising so we could continue to put on the show and other things we do at Boys and Girls Club and bring awareness. So it was a success.
And you know what's so cool? I mean, last year was the same thing, but this whole weekend was just fantastic because it's really our time to really, I feel like we're really making, just doing something great, you know? And we're talking about Friday, obviously, the night where, you know, it was good to see, you know, all of our big sponsors, but all of, you know, the awareness and doing that. But Sunday was
even better.
Even better.
Yeah.
Because Sunday, you know, Heal LA really took the lead on Sunday. And, you know, we had, over 150, I think 200 kids.
Yeah.
From, you know, Boys and Girls Clubs. The kids we brought were a lot of them from our old music therapy programs, as well as, you know, foster care kids that are really, really going through it. And to see them have such a great time on Sunday was so rewarding and so impactful for us. So, again, we want to thank everyone but not just the sponsors, the board, Prince, Heal LA, John Muto, not just you guys, but really the people who helped make DDJF happen. All those people out there who are donating 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever you're donating, it's making a difference. So really, I can't thank each and every one of you, but around the world, thank you, thank you, thank you.
And I don't know if you guys felt this or realized this, but I did when I was on the red carpet. The event takes place at Havenhurst, which is like the family house. And that was the spot that we went to when our mother passed, that we went directly there from the hospital. And I remember being there, and I remember seeing all of our uncles. Our Uncle Michael flew in. All of them were there. And I remember just for a split second, I was being asked a question, you know, how DDJF formed and what does it do and everything. And I glimpsed to this area in the property where I clearly remember seeing all my uncles hugging and just everybody being loving and supporting us. So it came full circle for me. All that love that was there when we left, when our mother left us, and just what we're doing and how many people we're helping and everybody that's helping as well. So it was a moment for me.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take this moment to announce and introduce our guest for today.
All right.
As we said earlier in the show, Our topic is domestic violence, and we've known this next guest, she showed us a picture a year ago from way back in the day, so I guess we've known you for over two decades, and she's being quiet. You can say hi.
Hi.
Oh, my fault, Gigi.
Hi.
Strike two.
Yeah,
that is strike two. You do that.
Hey, you get the
You know what I really found interesting right there?
Yeah.
Taj was telling her to get closer to the mic, which
were
I thought
you, Taj?
Yeah, I thought that was actually very Quite confusing.
Today we have Gigi Taylor, and Gigi is very passionate about domestic violence. I remember when the 2020 episode came on and we were talking about how our mother was murdered, Gigi, I don't know if you tweeted Gigi or if you made a comment, but you're like, you have to acknowledge that your mother was also a victim of domestic violence. And you're absolutely right. So when, I mean, all our interactions with you, it seems like, Gigi, you've really grasped domestic violence and really learned a lot about it. And we wanted you to come here to share with the world about domestic violence. So my first question to you is, what is domestic violence?
Well, I'd like to say, first of all, I'm a survivor of domestic violence.
Oh, I like it.
That's why I'm speaking. So, is that better?
Yeah, much better.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah,
thank you.
So, a lot of people do not understand what domestic violence entails. So, I'll just give a brief statement about that, okay?
Yeah.
So, domestic violence is actually a pattern of abusive behavior that is used by one partner, which is the abuser, to gain and or maintain power and control over the other partner, the victim, in an intimate relationship. Now, intimate relationship is meaning the partners are either currently married, used to be married, current boyfriend, girlfriend, used to be boyfriend and girlfriend, or even currently live together or used to live together, or they have a child together.
Really? So domestic violence isn't, you know, it's not really father and son, you know?
Well.
Or can it be?
It can be.
Okay.
It can be. That would get into another whole show.
Okay.
But yes, domestic violence can occur.
Because domestic doesn't mean like within the home or within a loving situation. I think
it's more of, for purposes of this show, it's an intimate relationship. Like, you're married.
Got it.
Like,
so it's a relationship based on.
Yeah, intimate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the one thing I want to say is, because when I asked you earlier, I said you as a victim of domestic violence. You corrected me immediately and said a survivor of domestic violence. And I thought that was pretty cool and very powerful. You don't look at yourself as a victim of domestic violence.
Well, I'm not a victim anymore. I was a victim. And because I have escaped and I'm no longer in that situation, that's when one can say they're a survivor.
Okay.
Interesting.
So can you share with us kind of your story?
Sure.
And how it went about? Like, because you're in a relationship in the couple decades ago, and you had to deal with some domestic violence. Is that correct?
Yes. Well.
Don't worry.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Go ahead.
So
Do you want to not talk about it?
I do want to talk about it.
Okay.
So I met my former spouse when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we married in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't marry right away. We married after my oldest son was 4. And the abuse didn't start until I became pregnant with our second child.
Mm.
I don't know why. I don't know the reason for that. But it was more verbal abuse, psychological abuse, and emotional abuse. There was no physical abuse at first. Then, after my son was born, my younger son, that's when it started to get physical. And in December of 1995, right before Christmas, my former spouse beat me, and he was throwing things, and both of our children, I have an older son as well, he was 5 at the time, was there, and I remember him running, and had to find him, he was under his bed, I had to take him to a neighbor's, the police were called, investigation ensued. And because of who his employer is,
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Yeah,
so what I'm trying to say is that he's in a position of power. Mm-hmm. So it was very... That's a whole nother subject. But because, you know, people think that domestic violence can just happen to someone who's poor or from... you know, not if you're upper middle class mm-hmm. or anything like that. And that's what I'm trying to say.
So it can happen to
anyone. Upper middle class, no matter what your choice of career is or what you do. You can be famous. You can be
so anything. What are the different types of abuse?
How I escaped?
Sure. I was going to ask.
I'm sorry.
Okay, go ahead.
So
go
a little ahead. Nervous. So everyone listening, forgive me.
Go
so,
ahead.
So I just wanted to say, so after... after my younger son was born, the abuse started. But then in December of 1995, it was physical, as I just said. Mm-hmm. And the police were called, and they took pictures, and you know, I was bleeding, and he had hit me in the face. He threw a phone at me. It cut my head.
And you were married at this time?
Yes, we were married. So we were married. I'm sorry. So we married in 93, mm-hmm. and we... divorced in April of 2009.
Wow. So you went through a couple years of this domestic violence.
Yes. So almost.
How did you make the change?
So what I did was, there was a final incident that happened, mm-hmm. and that was in 2004. I was getting dressed. My former spouse was in the shower, and I said, you know, if you're going to not respect me, and at that time, and this is relevant to the story, is that he was having an affair. Mm. I said, if you're going to continue to have an affair, I'm not going to cook, clean, mm-hmm. and do all these things. Because I was a homemaker during my marriage, so I didn't work, and I was a homemaker, a stay-at-home mom. So I said, I can't continue to do that. And so he said, yes, you will. And I said, no, I'm not. I said, I cannot be your wife while you're cheating. Next thing I know, hand was around the throat. I hear my neck crack, and I wake up. I'm on the floor. It took me a minute to see where he was, and then, you know, obviously, why am I on the floor? What happened? Quickly, I remembered what happened. I stayed still, but I also remembered that my younger son was in the backyard playing with our dog, and I had to get up. And as I got up, he grabbed me, he set me on the bed and said, I can't believe you're alive. I knew you were dead. You're not breathing for 10 minutes. Wow. And he says, if you call my employer, I will kill you. As the tears streamed down my face and I saw his eyes, I believed him. My son comes in and says, Mommy, my younger son, I was looking for you. Where were you? I said, I was in the bathroom. No, I checked. So I'm trying to make excuses, and he goes, oh, here, I had picked you a flower, and I couldn't find you to give it to you. He always picked me flowers. He's always done that. So I looked at him, and I said inside to myself, I have to start making a plan to escape. And that's what I did. It was I had to leave. I had no choice because I almost died.
Yeah. Wow, that's very powerful and commendable. And I'm sorry you had to go through that. And let me ask you this. When you share that story, what does it do for you? Does it help relieve you at all? Does it bring you down a notch? Does it pick you up a notch? What does it do?
It makes, when I tell my story, well, telling it today, I've told it to close friends before, but it makes me sad. It makes me proud. I know that's not expected, but it makes me proud regarding, I guess, for my two sons. I wish I would have left sooner. Trust me, I do. But it's not about being strong. It's about having courage. So when someone says, you know, you can just leave when you want, or you should be strong, that's not about strength. I was already strong enough to endure 15 years of abuse. I was strong. I learned that in therapy. But I'm proud because I found the courage, I guess, and it makes me, telling my story makes me feel like I'm
empowers
helping someone. Empowers me, that's what I was going to say, to help someone else.
Okay, so, and over the years, you've kind of become really committed to learning and sharing and bringing awareness to domestic violence in attempt to helping people who are going through it or who may be going through it, trying to give them the courage to do something about it.
Yes.
Now, I'll have to be honest. For me, when I think of domestic violence, I pretty much only think of physical violence. I don't know why. I know there's other types of abuse, but if someone says, I think most people, Taj, Terrell, you guys with me on that?
Yeah.
If I said domestic violence is kind of a physical image, but there's all types of abuse. Can you share with our listeners some of the types of abuse?
Sure. So the types of abuse in a domestic violence situation that's perpetrated by the abuser into the victim, it can be physical, sexual, believe it or not, because there is marital rape.
Mm-hmm.
So for those women, or I'm speaking from, today I'm speaking from a woman's point of view.
Good.
And yes, domestic violence does happen to men. It happens to same-sex partners. But for today's purpose, I'm just speaking as a woman who was in a, the abuser was a man.
Okay.
Yes, it does happen in those situations as well. And also a psychological abuse or mental abuse, emotional, verbal abuse, financial abuse, and spiritual abuse. And it includes actions that influence, you know, another person. It includes like that intimidate, manipulate, humiliate, isolate, frighten, terrorize, threaten, coerce. You know, they hurt and they wound someone.
What? I don't know if you know this answer because you're not a perpetrator. But what is the motive usually from someone who's an abuser? Is it just control? Is it, what is it that, because I can't put my hand.
So, like I said in the beginning, it the crux of domestic violence, you remember, this is a behavior. So, the abuser is trying to gain and manipulate, gain and maintain power and control over another person. That's what it is.
Mm.
And they use the abuse to do that.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a power thing.
Yeah, it's power and control. Okay. You want to have power and control to gain power or control and then maintain it. And how do you gain it and maintain it is by committing acts of abuse.
Mm.
And so that's...
Now, the domestic violence isn't just affecting the victim or survivor, however you're looking at it, but it also has a serious effect on the children.
Right. But can I just real quick, just briefly, and I know that the listeners aren't ignorant, that they're pretty smart.
Yeah.
So they can understand. So, you know, the types of abuse, just real quick, you know, physical abuse can be any one of these things. It's hitting, slapping, choking, kicking, shoving, grabbing, pinching, biting, pulling hair, throwing things, following the victim, keeping the victim from moving freely, even part of that is also denying the victim medical care or forcing alcohol or drug use upon the victim. That does happen.
Wow.
I haven't experienced all of those things. My abuse was physical, emotional, verbal, psychological, and yes, my husband did rape me. Twice.
Sorry.
And so we have, you know, psychological abuse. We have verbal, emotional abuse. And one thing that I think it's really important to point out is there's a thing called gaslighting. That's a psychological tactic that was done to me. And
I've never heard of gaslighting. So what is it?
Gaslighting is I'll give you an example of it. It was actually, the name was from a movie where the husband made the wife feel like she was going crazy. So he would put the keys here and she, you know, I thought I put the keys here. No, you didn't. Would move the keys and make her think. So I'll give you a quick example of what my former spouse did to me. This stands out. I can't get this out of my head. It's just so crazy that this happened, but it did. He was chewing gum. And I said, can I have some gum, man? He was like, what gum? I was like, oh, you were chewing gum. He's like, I wasn't chewing gum. I was like, you weren't? He was like, no. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were chewing gum. 10 minutes later, he's chewing that same gum again. And I was like, what? I didn't know. He would move things in the house, like, because I was a homemaker. I would do things, and then I'd go in the bathroom, and things were messed up. And I was like, so it makes you think you're going, it makes you going crazy. You think you're going crazy.
Yeah. But here's my question to that. Here's my response. It seems like you're an incredibly trustworthy person. And once you let someone in your little circle or in your life, you trust them implicitly. You trust them with everything, and you value their honesty and expect their honesty and trust.
I maybe not quite. I think that I have a hard time trusting.
Maybe now?
Maybe now. Yes. Maybe now. Yes.
Because of your experience.
Oh, yes. I'm very private. I'm very private. I only have 6 followers on Twitter for a reason.
were you always like that, though? Were you always real private? Okay.
No, I was very outgoing,
Think you saw the good in everyone. And you know, and it's sad, but I think some of us would have been like that, but we, you know, have been, from our family perspective, I don't want to play like I'm a victim of any sort, but we've seen how the people can manipulate and things can get twisted. So I think that helped protect us a bit. I want to talk about children. Before we get into other stuff, I want to talk about children. What is it like, some of the domestic, the effects of domestic violence on children? Even if you're going to speak from your experience, that works.
I just want to point out, I think it's important, you know, I'm not a therapist. I'm not a psychologist. Mm-hmm. I'm not even an expert on domestic violence. I'm just a woman who is a survivor of domestic violence. And I hope that I can share this story to prevent
from happening
to someone, or if a victim's listening, that they will hear my story and find the courage to that. So I just want to make that clear. So
beautiful.
This is just my perspective and what I experienced. So, you know, like with my children, I would say both my boys, when I did leave, I did make a plan. So when we did leave, both of my children were, from what I saw, were angry. They were depressed. My younger son gained a lot of weight. It seemed like he gained a lot of weight. He lost it since then, of course, but just ate, you know, would eat, you know, and just trying to maybe suppress everything, because we were going through a divorce as well. So when I left, it was divorce as well. So how I left also was I filed a domestic violence restraining order, which removed him from our home and protected me and the children. But our home was sold from under, another form of abuse he did, he sold our home from underneath us. We came home from, I picked up my children from school, we came home and there were people in my house, it was already sold. Jeez. So we were homeless.
Wow.
So we had to go live with my mom, which thank goodness she was able to take us in. It was a very small condominium of hers, but we were safe and so forth. But my children experienced so many things. My younger son was in therapy for 4 years, and even had the courage to write his father a letter saying, you know, once you stop abusing my mom and once you get help, then I'll visit you again, because I had sole custody, but their father did have visitation through the restraining order. And so
what was your role as mom to your kids when they were going through this? Did you share with them your story a lot? Because that's their father. So
no.
You kept that within.
My older son, he's 28, he knew and saw more. My younger son, who's 22, when we left, it was he was 9. When he was 14, he saw an episode of verbal that he never seen his dad do before. And that's why he was like, I don't ever want to visit him again. And he wrote him a letter saying, you need help. And he wrote his dad a very articulate letter. He's very articulate. He's very savvy. And he's pretty mature for his age. So for him to be 14 to address his father, who is, I can say this part, he's a very huge, muscular man, very intimidating. He's African-American. That was very hard for him. But he wanted to, his therapist encouraged him to write him a letter, and that did no good. And my son hasn't had a relationship with his father since then.
But I think the letter did good for your son.
It did do good for him. He knows now that
But it also helped him get it out.
Yes, it did.
You know?
And he knows that he has a letter that he wrote me. I brought it, but I won't read it verbatim.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that, thank you. He was so young. He's only 10 or 11, but he was saying, thank you, Mom, for your example. I know how to treat my wife when I get married. And, you know, this is so cute and innocent. Right. So I would say just depression. My older son has a lot of anger, had a lot of anger. But we all three, me, my younger son, and my older son, we have forgiven him.
Mm.
We have forgiven him. But for me, that doesn't, it's for anyone. Just because you forgive someone doesn't mean that's reconciliation. It doesn't mean I'm going to start having dinner with, or you know what I'm saying? Well, furthermore, he hasn't seen my younger son since he was 14. So I don't know if they will ever reconcile that part. But as far as me, I do forgive him.
Are you okay with taking a couple of calls if people had a couple questions?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay. So if you had have a question about domestic violence or the story, you can call 323-203-0815. And again, I'm going to say it to you later, but I'm sure my brothers and I, or my brothers would agree. I just want to thank you for your courage to speak out and to share your story, because I do believe you're helping someone out there. So thank you, Gigi.
You're welcome. Thank you.
But while we wait for some phone calls, did I get the number? I did, right?
Yes, yeah,
did.
Let's say it again.
The number is 323-203-0815. Before I take a couple phone calls, I do have another question for you.
Sure.
You had said that there's a couple of misconceptions about domestic violence. Can you clarify on that? Can you?
Sure.
I think you have some good points on that.
Yeah. So this is just what people have said to me, or made a statement, or asked me. They said one of the things that was told to me was, "You need to be strong. Just be strong. Just be strong. You should be strong enough to leave." That is the biggest misconception.
Mm.
It is not about being strong. And I said earlier, I was already strong to endure 15 years of abuse. I had to be strong to endure. It's about courage.
Right.
I had to find courage. A victim has to find courage. Because courage is doing something that you're afraid of. You're doing it anyway. You're afraid, but you have to do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not about being strong. It's about having courage.
So how do you get the courage?
For me, it was almost dying. For another victim, only they know when that happens.
Wow.
And you have to, if anyone that's listening that knows a victim, or, you know, a family member or a friend, it's very hard for you, and it's hard for that person, because maybe you don't know everything about it, and you're trying to help, and you want to say, be strong, or leave, or, you know, all these things, and sometimes that can make the victim cower. It won't give them courage. So you have to...
It can backfire.
It can backfire, yes.
Okay.
So each victim has to have something happen that will lead them to that. Unfortunately, some don't live.
Okay. So you feel like the courage has to come from within.
Within, not even that. Yeah, you just have to have the courage. Something will happen. When my former spouse said, you know, basically, why are you still alive? You were on the ground. You weren't breathing. Not that I was unconscious and breathing. I wasn't breathing.
Mm.
So I was thinking to myself, not saying it to him, it was like, as me as a Christian, I just saying my faith. I was like, that was a miracle, and God did that, and
for a reason.
It's time to leave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even though I was scared, it didn't matter. I had to go.
Had you tried leaving before?
Yes.
Yeah, tried. Was his behavior constant throughout, or was there patches where he had promised he changed and did change for a little bit and it would come back? Or?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. And that's a typical abuser.
Mm-hmm.
And the times that I wanted to leave, it would be, I found Christ. I gave Jesus Christ my life. I'm a Christian now, and I'm in therapy, and I bought this book, and I did. I was like, oh, wow.
He's trying to change. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And right back.
Yeah.
And that happened many times, many, many times.
Mm. Okay. And we're going to take a phone call.
Can I answer your question?
Yeah. Yeah. No, we're going to take a phone call. Who do we have with us today on The Power of Love?
Hi, this is Sequoia.
How are you, Sequoia?
Hey, Sequoia.
I'm good, how are you?
Good.
Hey, Sequoia.
Hey, Gigi.
What you got for us, Sequoia?
Well, my mom was actually a victim from my dad. He verbally, physically, and sexually abused her, and I have witnessed all of them.
Mm.
And I was like really young at the time, and I remember I'm the youngest of three, begging my mom to leave. Like, if you're unhappy, if you're done with this, leave. But she will always say, I can't. What about y'all? Y'all need your mom and your dad. And that made me feel like really guilty about it, because mm-hmm. I started thinking that it was my fault.
Wow.
But she actually has stayed with him, and now it's like that guilt actually turned into resentment towards both of them, because she's staying and making us feel guilty, and now it just feels like she's complaining about it instead of she's voicing what she went through.
Wow.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry, Sequoia, that your mother went through that, and I know you're just making a statement, but can I say something? You didn't ask a question. I would say that, first of all, I need to tell you that it's not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry that your mom, as a victim, is, as your words, is making you feel guilty. I never asked my children that. Oh, wow. I think maybe I asked them that. But I felt at a time that they probably did feel it was their fault. And mm-hmm. I told them that it wasn't. So I'm sorry if your mom hasn't told you that or you don't feel that. But I'm telling you, it's not your fault. Not your fault. Yeah. Your mom has to make her own choices. And she has to find the courage to finally. Did you say that have they separated already, or is she still with your dad?
She's still with him. Like, one time she did leave him, but she went back and nothing ever changed.
Yeah.
And it's like their room was right next to mine, so I could hear everything. And they would even often put us in the middle of an argument. And sometimes I would say, look, that's between y'all, not us. But then I would get in trouble for saying that.
Yes. Sequoia, my question is, I hope you've had therapy in this topic. Have you?
Actually, I haven't. I just actually been talking with my brother and sister about it, and even talking with other people on social media about domestic violence, but I never actually got therapy, because my mom always believed what happens in this house stays in this house, and
that
made it worse.
Yeah, and you know what? That's a very common mentality. I assume in around the world, but I know, you know, as a black man myself, that's something I've heard a lot too, you know, so that you're not alone in that. And I'm just from my, if you asked me, if I heard this story a couple years ago, I probably wouldn't have pushed it as much. But what I've learned is you got to talk it out and get some professional help. Even if it's, you know, a couple of sessions, you got to speak it out and get some type of guidance, because I don't want that holding you back in your life. I don't know how much it's impacting you, and truthfully, I don't know if you know how much that could be impacting you. So I think you got to get some type of some professional help, even if, like I said, even if it's one or two sessions, just get it there and get some another opinion. You know, and you're amazingly strong and courageous for sharing what you shared.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And all four of us here wish you nothing but the best and all the love and support. And we want you to know your story is not unique. There's many people that are going through it. Just a lot of people don't talk about it, and they shuffle it away.
Yes.
They brush it away. And it's going to come out some way. And I hope all the best for you, Sequoia, and thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. And I actually did realize how bad it affected me because, like, when I was younger, I actually did try to commit suicide.
Yeah.
I'm 28 now, and I realize that it's not my fault, but I guess that resentment is, like, still there.
And you know what, Sequoia? You're 28 now, and I'm just telling you, as someone who's got 10 years on you, I don't want to say it's not over, what I'm saying is you may not be finished healing. You may not. It's something that it's kind of like me with losing my mother. Even today, there's stuff that hits me differently than 10 years ago. So I don't want you to think that you're past something when you may not be really past it. There's so many different phases to something like this. You know, what happens in our childhood really can have a serious effect on us. And from your story, I think that would be my strong advice.
I think also that by going to a therapist, it might link into certain things. Like, you might go, oh, that's why I do that, or that's why I do that, not even knowing that it's all this that you've held inside. So I think in that way it would be very helpful for you to go, because you probably have certain things that you do, not even realizing that you're doing
it. Connected.
Them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sequoia, thank you so much.
Thank you,
and
Sequoia.
It's so great to hear your voice. Yes. I haven't heard your voice in a little while. But,
thank you.
But I hope you have an amazing rest of your week. And please take our advice on getting at least one session in,
yes,
okay?
Yes, please, Sequoia. Please do that.
I think we all got you in age here and experience. So take our advice, Sequoia. That's not a great thing. But I wish I could be 28. But all right, Sequoia, take care of yourself.
Take care, Sequoia.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Terry, you have anything?
Yeah, it's just, well, thank you again, Sequoia, for calling in. It's tough. It's not easy to share personal stories like that, you know.
It's very courageous, and I hope, Gigi, you too, when you share these stories, you do feel a bit empowered, but I want you to know that you're making an impact, you know, and both Sequoia and you are making an impact on people, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. And I wanted to say, I don't know if I said, but, you know, I've had years of therapy, by the way. So I'm still in therapy. I still see my therapist. Now I still see my therapist, well, my psychologist. I see her, and I don't mind sharing this. I see her once a month, mm-hmm. just so she can
check
or whatever, because I don't want to get too much into this, but this is important. Some survivors, not all, but I did read this statistic. It's like 99% of survivors suffer PTSD.
Mm.
And I was diagnosed with that, and I didn't believe the diagnosis. I was diagnosed with the PTSD due to the domestic violence.
PTSD stands for?
Post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
And I was told this in 2013, and the therapist I was seeing at that time, I said, with all due respect, I don't think I have PTSD. That's only military people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I got another. Then I found my psychologist now, who specializes in PTSD. I wanted to see what she had to say. And boy, did it blow my mind. So in 2014, mm-hmm. I was diagnosed with that because the symptoms I was having, I thought I was just, I had already been gone.
Yeah.
But I thought that I was just being overprotective. Like, I would constantly be looking out the window. Things I was doing, I thought it was just anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't. These were the symptoms of the PTSD.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. And I remember standing in my window one time, because my psychologist now said, well, when you start doing those things, try to, like, recognize that you're doing them. And that happened one time, and I started weeping because I was like, I do have it.
Mm.
And I didn't realize. And I just, I stood in, I wept.
But now that you know that, it helps you deal with it.
Yes.
And how to
navigate. And I do a booklet, and it just, it's, and you can recover from PTSD, and you can have triggers where it comes again, but it was really bad. And I have to say, you know, I was going from once a week to where I'm now once a month.
I have a couple questions, Gigi.
Sure.
Number one, when did you start going to therapy? Well, like, when was the first time you went to therapy?
For domestic violence?
Just period. And what were your thoughts? Because we've talked about this on the show. Mm. A lot of times people think of therapy as something's wrong with me. and they don't want to, they avoid it.
Yeah, they do. And they also don't, they feel like, I'm not telling a stranger my business because mm-hmm. I don't know what they'll do with that information. Mm-hmm. You need to know one thing is that anyone who goes to a therapist or a psychologist or counseling, they're bound by confidentiality and you don't even have to give them your last name.
Okay.
So anyone can go to therapy.
Yeah, that's right.
And you don't have to say, like if you were to go, my last name, you know.
Yeah.
They don't even know nothing about you but your first name. Give them a nickname. It doesn't even matter. They don't care. They're just there to treat you. But so, I'm sorry.
How'd you feel your first time going to therapy?
So when I wanted to go to therapy. So I wasn't like, had any like, I wanted to go because I needed to go. So when I went, is that what you're asking me?
I basically want to know, do you think you would have been able to be a quote unquote survivor without therapy?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because a lot of people do try to avoid therapy, you know.
I think, well, I was in therapy while it was happening. But my initial first therapist, I didn't tell them everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, because part of my abuse that was being perpetrated was the psychological stuff. So it was like, it was me. So I was going to therapy to fix me. Mm. And it wasn't me. Mm, right. It was him. But I was thinking it was me making him abuse me. I must be doing something. And so when I got the right therapist, once I found the right therapist and I could open up, and really get to the nitty gritty of it, then I really started, my eyes were opened, I was explained.
And that probably helped give you the courage. Helped, it played a role. It had to play some type of role.
To be quite honest with you, I think that it did give me, well, I can't go into this one part, but here's something that happened, I'll say it just real quickly. Part of the abuse was I was misdiagnosed as bipolar. It was part of the gaslighting thing that I explained earlier. I found a new therapist. It was like a team of 5 doctors at Loma Linda Children's Hospital. And they were like, you do not have bipolar. You are suffering from battered wives syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
When I found that out, I was on 2,600 milligrams of different medications for bipolar. I had a stroke in the shower. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was when I started getting with the right therapist, and what it was is I had battered wife syndrome, and then also I had ADHD. And so once I got off all that, I started having a clear head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then I would agree to therapy, and then the courage came after that last incident. Because I was still afraid. I mean, I was feeling good, and it was empowering. Like, I was in therapy, and I wasn't discussing my diagnosis with him, and I was getting better underneath the radar.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that incident is... really, I was like, I know I'm afraid, but I have to do this for my children. So, did that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, we only have a couple minutes left. So, I want to get to the end of the show where we give some information out to anyone who could be suffering, any victims, any family or friends who is a victim. Or I just want to give some information to our listeners in case they see anything. So what do you got for us?
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, anyone who's listening right now who's a victim of domestic violence, if anyone who's listening and they know a victim and you want help and are seeking resources and information, or even, you know, if you're questioning unhealthy aspects of your relationship and you live in the United States, you can call the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. And for individuals who are deaf or hard of hearing, the number is 1-800-787-3224. And then also, you can go to their website, and they have so much information. It is...
Do you know their website?
Yes, I do. It's www.thehotline.org.
Okay.
And if you click on the Get Help bar at the top, they have so many things. And also, if you call in, it's totally confidential. And they are experts.
Okay, great.
And then just one last thing. Anyone who's not residing in the United States that's listening, I know this sounds really cheesy, but the truth of the matter is you can go on Google and Google the information, and it will pop up whatever country you live in, like your country's national or county area hotline.
Okay.
So I didn't want to leave you guys out there listening. I was considering you. I searched for so many things. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be more specific, but all I could find is basically just Google,
yeah,
and you'll find something there.
Perfect.
Tara, what were you saying?
I was going to say, and this might sound crazy, but there are potential people that are listening that are guilty of domestic violence. So I was just wondering if you know any places if someone's guilty of domestic violence and are seeking help. What can they call these numbers?
If you're an abuser, is that what you're saying? Yeah, if basically. You're an abuser, and you definitely need to seek a professional help, a psychologist or a therapist. If you can acknowledge this, that's huge.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone can say, how can someone do these things and can they change?
Mm-hmm.
Some, no, because they don't think they've done anything like Mr. Bohanna.
Right, mm-hmm. That's right.
Right, that's very
God
true.
God have mercy on him. He got... But what I'm saying that but there are some that are, if you can acknowledge that,
mm-hmm.
you need to seek professional help. And you can Google, and I think any therapist can help with that. And they will definitely be able to show you how to heal yourself and maybe ask for forgiveness or from the victim. And
that's very courageous.
Thank you, Terrell. That's like
and huge
very
as well.
Courageous because you could save someone's life.
Yes.
That's right.
And a lot of stress in children and everything.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
Seek help.
If you think in any way you tend to do abusive things, then as Terrell and
well,
Gigi
you know
and
if you're
say,
doing them.
Yeah, but sometimes, like you said, people think they're not doing anything or it's not them or maybe.
If you're on that borderline.
If you don't know.
If you're not too sure, like,
research.
Is this, yes, I
get
agree with
help.
You, TJ. You're right, you're right, yes.
All right, well, we got to close the show. But Gigi, again, once again, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your story, inspiring
time so
many
I can
others.
Say one last word?
Yes, real quick.
I just wanted to say, if you're a victim who's listening, I want to tell you that it's not your fault. You're not responsible for your abuser's actions. And that I love you, I honor you, I support you, and I empathize with you because I've been where you have been. And my prayer for you is to have courage enough to make a safe plan to escape because it truly is a life or death situation. And for those who have had a parent or a loved one that was a victim that was murdered by their abuser, this is for them. I speak on their behalf and I hope they're proud of me.
Thank you, Gigi. That's so sweet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
All right, well, that's it. We're going to close the show. Again, thanks to Gigi for sharing and teaching us all about domestic violence.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you.
We hope you guys listening enjoyed the show and learned something, and we hope you realize that you can play a role in helping others. You can help yourself, and you can help your loved ones, and you can make a difference in the world. We will be back next Wednesday from 1 to 2 p.m., as we like to do, we want to share love and spread peace. And if you have any information, if you want to know any more information about our foundation, go ahead and visit ddjf.org. Mm-hmm. Much love to you all. Todd, Cheryl, you guys anything?
That's it.
All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.